This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we move further into our adventure in the Acts of the Apostles with Ananias and Sapphira, signs and wonders, apostles arrested and freed, we must obey God, and Gamaliel's counsel. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
The marriage rate in the United States is already troubling. It is going down and it shows no signs of turning around. And now, the increasing political divide, especially between young women and young men, women going left, men going right, will have a further detrimental effect on that rate. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about political views and the U.S. marriage rate, Lyman Stone. He's a PhD candidate in population dynamics at McGill University, director of research for demographic intelligence, adjunct fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, research fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, and co-author of a column for The Atlantic titled, Now Political Polarization Comes for Marriage Prospects. Lyman, welcome back.
Thank you. It's always good to be with you all.
In terms of the bigger picture, what's happening to marriage rates in America overall?
They are in decline. I think most people have intuited this, right? But yeah, the marriage rate is declining. People are getting married later. And a growing share of people are never marrying at all. So basically what that means is you have a lot more single people at all ages, but particularly in their teens, 20s, and early 30s, there's a lot more single people than there used to be.
You mentioned later marriage. How is that factored into these numbers?
Well, so, you know, sometimes people change when something happens in life, but they still eventually get to it. People don't usually have their first child anymore at 15 or 16 like they did in the past, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to have a first child, right? They're just going to have a first child later in life. So it can be tricky to untangle delay in something versus not doing it at all. But in marriage, as with fertility, we actually see both. We see that there's a delay. These things are happening later. And also fewer people are ultimately marrying at all.
How have political views entered the list of criteria for marriage?
Well, people have always wanted to marry spouses that share their worldview, their perspective. Politics is just part of that. Classically, we think about interreligious marriages being a kind of, you know, major marriage across worldviews or something. But these are all basically just proxies for kind of worldview, approach to problems, outlook on life, life goals, things like that. And what we know about these kind of cross-worldview marriages is they are less common. Most people want to marry someone who shares a lot of their basic life orientations, and that has always been true. In fact, it doesn't really look like there's been a big change over time in like marriages across the political aisle. There's been some increase in marriages across religious lines, although that's mostly driven by basically, it's just secularization in general, people who just aren't as invested in their religion, so it's not a big worldview divide for them. So marrying across worldview lines hasn't changed a lot in the last 20 or 30 years. People don't want to do it for reasons I will get into, but that's actually a big contrast to something else. Like, you know, interracial marriage, of course, is way more common now than it was in the past. And that's for the good reason that people are less racist today, which is a wonderful thing. And also, the reality is that race does not strictly correlate with worldview. So people can often find someone of different race or ethnicity who they nonetheless share really important things in common with.
So this isn't a new phenomenon.
It's not new that people would want to sort by politics or by worldview. What is new is that in the past, men and women had pretty similar politics, but they no longer do. We're seeing a big change in both men and women's relative politics.
What is homogamy and why does it matter?
So homogamy is this fun word that demographers like, right? Homo meaning same, gamy meaning marriage or technically wife. But basically what we're saying is people marrying someone who's like them. So in this case, what we mean is, you know, like them in terms of worldview. And the reason homogamy matters is that marriages that are homogamous on major life goals, major worldviews, certain personality traits tend to be more successful and marital success. This is very sociological speak, right? You know, what does it mean to be a successful marriage? But what we mean in the academic studies on this is people report a high degree of happiness and satisfaction with their marriage, and they tend to not get divorced as much or as soon. So what we're saying is when you marry someone who shares your major life orientations, worldview, life goal, aspirations, things like that, both partners tend to be happier with the marriage. They tend to report more satisfaction. And also the marriage tends to last longer and be less likely to end in divorce. And so generally, homogamy on worldview and orientation is a positive factor for marriages. It's nice to be able to marry someone that you share major life goals with. And it's something that most people want. You know, they intuitively understand that marrying someone that doesn't share your life goals is a recipe for conflict.
So talk about how young females are trending to the political left pretty sharply, while young males are trending to the political right, and how it plays into politics and marriage prospects.
So for this study, we used the General Social Survey, which is this regular survey of Americans going back to the 1970s. And in particular, we looked at single people under the age of 30. So people who are in that kind of deciding what they want in life and what they want in a mate stage. And what we found is that the share of young women who identified as liberal, and in this case, these are women who identify as either extremely liberal or moderately liberal, but we don't include women who identify as slightly liberal. We call them moderates. So the share of young women who are very or moderately liberal has risen dramatically. Now it's something like a quarter of single women under 30 identify as moderately or very liberal versus under 10% a few decades ago. Whereas for young single men, for single men under age 30, we actually see a slight shift to the right, that they're slightly more likely to call themselves conservative than they were 15, 20 years ago. The shift among men is not as big as the shift among women. But the upshot of this is that whereas the sexes used to be relatively balanced in terms of their political perspectives, over the last 10, 15 years, they've become extremely unbalanced. So that today, there are far more liberal women than liberal men, and considerably more conservative men than there are conservative women, implying that large shares of liberal women and conservative men will be unable to marry someone who shares their political ideology.
Do we have any insight as to why this split, this political split among young females and young males is occurring?
That's a good question. The shift in men, I think, is pretty straightforward because it's not very big, right? Men have seen a moderate shift more to the right, which is probably a kind of a reaction to a perception of feminism going too far, or men feeling like their position in society is deteriorating, or like they're not getting their fair share of national growth or progress. And it's a fairly modest change. It's worth noting that these men who identify as conservative, they actually espouse, this same survey asks about a lot of things. It also asks things like, you know, do you think that a mother should stay home with her children when they're young? Do you think, you know, if jobs are scarce, should men get priority over women? Can a woman be a good political leader? All these questions. And on these kinds of questions, young men today are more liberal than in the past. So young men today, they are identifying as more conservative, but they actually have fairly gender egalitarian kind of political and economic attitudes. They're just reacting against what they see as a more extreme kind of gender ideology on the left that disfavors them. The story for women is a bit more complicated because we do see this really dramatic increase, like a doubling or tripling of the share of women who are liberal over just 10 or 15 years. And so this is a bit trickier to explain. We don't offer a definitive explanation in the article. For that, you really want to look at like online communities and how women in particular have created a really unique form of socialization through social media, Instagram, TikTok, all these ways that women basically kind of create these girl spaces online that then develop their own unique ideologies, cultures, traits. The original example of this is like Tumblr, this website that used to exist. I don't know, maybe it still does exist. It was a terrible place. But whatever the case, it created a really unique culture that's really bled over into kind of internet girl culture more broadly. Guys also do their own weird guy culture on the internet, but it really hasn't been as influential. Men are just not as good at creating a culture together as women are, apparently. So you get this kind of emergent sex-typical set of traits that is only beginning to be understood. I said on Twitter, you know, none of the surveys that we have ask things like beliefs that, you know, certain rocks have spiritual energies, or beliefs that your zodiac sign tells you something really important about yourself. Use of essential oils. I suspect that these behaviors that have become a lot more common in recent years, particularly for women, would also correlate with this rise in more liberal perspectives among women, but I don't know because we don't have data on it. There's also been a dramatic rise in diagnosed and self-reported mental illness among young liberal women over the last 20 years. And the internet, of course, is a key vector for mental illness. So it's possible that these things are co-emerging through basically the vector of very distinct internet socialization of young single women.
Who are more likely to factor in political views when thinking about marriage prospects, males or females?
That is a great question that I don't know the answer to. Right now, it seems like women are factoring this in more, and that's particularly true since Trump was elected, and even more so since the Dobbs decision repealing Roe v. Wade. It does seem like young single women in particular are taking the view, and you can see this in Twitter responses to this piece too, are taking the view that basically men are dangerous, that the normal male politic is dangerous to women, won't support her autonomy, you know, is racist, sexist, misogynistic, wants to force her to carry a baby, all these talking points. And so right now it does seem, and there was a nice survey at American Enterprise Institute recently, it does seem that women are somewhat more likely to be politically choosy than men are right now, at least according to their own self-reports. But we don't have any behavioral data on that, right? There's not actually some behavioral study out there showing how much one sex or the other chooses to swipe left based on politics or something like that. We just have people's self-reports. So it's hard to know exactly what to make of that.
Lyman Stone is our guest. We're talking about political views and the U.S. marriage rate. On the other side, how do these trends correspond with the rise of social media? Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is the author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June, Take Courage, Encouraging Words for Discouraging Times. This new resource reminds discouraged Christians of the one thing right in the world, the person who alone has overcome the world. Find out more about Take Courage at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Take Courage by Pastor Matt Harrison, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we move further into our adventure in the Acts of the Apostles with Ananias and Sapphira, signs and wonders, apostles arrested and freed, we must obey God, and Gamaliel's counsel. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University, Chicago.
Indeed, the quest for truth is at the core of a university's purpose. The liberal arts, illuminated by the revealed truths of Scripture, are powerful for equipping students for a life of self-governance. A disciple is one who follows the Master. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? He said that it means to take up one's cross. The cross is thus the symbol of dying for others, of dying to self for the sake of serving others. And a life of service is a life well lived.
Truth, Freedom, Vocation. Concordia University, Chicago. CUChicago.edu.
Memoria Press is a family-run publisher of classical Christian education materials for homeschools and private schools. Every page of the Memoria Press curriculum leads students to a mastery of content, an understanding of the classical heritage of the Christian West, and an appreciation of truth, goodness, and beauty. If you're interested in learning more, visit memoriapress.com and use the coupon code LPR23. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. memoriapress.com.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Lutherans for Life equips Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. Lutherans for Life's national conference is October 11th through the 13th in Cincinnati. The 2023 conference includes visits to the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter. You can learn more at lutheransforlife.org, lutheransforlife.org. We're talking about political views and the U.S. marriage rate. Lyman Stone is our guest. Lyman, how do you think these trends correspond with the rise of social media?
Social media is a huge factor in any kind of discussion about how our culture is changing, and particularly our culture of marriage and family. You know, social media creates this incubation area where we take 50 to 70% of the 12 to 16 year olds in the country, and we dump them into an essentially unsupervised cesspool with all the loneliest, least employed, angriest 30-somethings, because who has time to spend all their time on social media? It's people with nothing else to do. So we take all the nation's children, and then we just like lock them in a digital room with like all the least functional adults in society. And that's social media, because we don't segregate it by age, right? You get on Twitter, it doesn't matter what your age is. You get on Facebook, it doesn't matter what your age is. And the result is that kids in our society are increasingly, there's this survey called Monitoring the Future, where they survey high schoolers. And this emergence of major differences by sex, we see it in eighth graders, in ninth graders. This isn't like an adult thing. This is happening in childhood. It's in childhood that these big gender differences in political attitudes are emerging. So this is not about like adults coming to a rational decision that like, oh, you know, maybe liberalism is good or conservatism is good or something like that. This is basically about children being formed, socialized into a set of values. And so I think a big part of what's going on is social media has so thoroughly penetrated the household and into children's lives that it's basically running roughshod over every other socializing influence. I mean, if you're a parent and your kid is using really any form of social media, go ahead and chop off your estimate of your influence on your child's life by like 50%, because it's just such a powerful influence. Now, they might have a good circle of people on their social media. It might be their friends from church, in which case, okay, great. Like it's not threatening your objectives as a parent, maybe. But yeah, I mean, social media is a huge factor here, and it's especially a huge factor shaping the way children develop into young adults and the kinds of expectations they have in life and the kinds of anxieties that they carry into adulthood.
What are we seeing in other parts of the world, in particular East Asia, that may show us the future of politics and marriage in America?
Yeah, so East Asia is kind of like the apocalypse case, right? So places like Singapore, Korea, Taiwan have even lower marriage and fertility rates than we have. Korea's current fertility rate is something like 0.75 children per woman. which means that they can expect each generation, you know, to be 60% smaller than the previous one. And this is driven by low marriage. Married people in Asia still have 1.6, 1.7, 1.8 kids. This is driven by low marriage. And there are these surveys that have been done, particularly in Korea and Singapore, where they basically ask young single people, like, what do you want in a marriage? What do you expect from a marriage? And what they show is that men and women just have radically different politics. The men are not like crazy far right. They're like, look, you know, I think it's great if my wife works. When we have a small child, I earn more. It'd probably be good if she took a year or two off work. You know, I'm happy to support government maternity leave to pay for that. You know, they're not like far right frothing at the mouth radicals or something, okay? Whereas the responses that a lot of these women give is that they don't see children as an important part of marriage. They think marriage should come later in life. If they did have kids, as a sociologist, we would say they don't anticipate intra-household specialization in childcare. That is, they expect that their husband will do the same amount of childcare, which amounts to saying that they expect not to breastfeed, which is its own kind of political question for people. So you get all these debates, right? And the result is that men and women in Korea and Singapore and Taiwan just have fundamentally incompatible views of what the purpose of marriage is, what the purpose of family is, you know, what you should expect out of it. And when you add to that South Korean women report believing that something like 70% of Korean men are abusive. This is not true. 70% of Korean men are not, in fact, spousal abusers. But surveys show that Korean women believe 70% of men are spousal abusers. This isn't true, but the belief is out there. And so you get this idea that these extreme political differences give rise to kind of echo chambers. And in Korea, you see this for men as well, that there's this emerging trend of these very anti-feminist men engaging in political activism together. And really, they've successfully elected conservative candidates who've like abolished the Ministry of Gender Equality or whatever it was called. And so, it's very political. And the reality is, while there's a lot of erroneous beliefs on both sides, the truth is Korean young men and Korean young women really do have major differences in their worldview and attitudes. They do. And so if they got married across those differences, they'd probably have a lot of conflict in their marriage and it might not last. They're not wrong that their potential partners aren't necessarily good matches for them. The problem is what they're actually saying is there are no good matches for them because politics have become so gender polarized.
Finally, as a social scientist, make the case that natural marriage is good both individually and for our society.
It's a case that shouldn't have to be made, right? But obviously, marriage is an extraordinary blessing. So for the individuals, we know that married people, they live longer, particularly men, but women as well. Marriage is protective from any number of diseases and illnesses, but particularly from external causes, deaths, things like homicide, car accident, drug overdose, suicide, things like that. Married people are happier. And getting married is associated with an increase in happiness. A lot of people want to be married. And so getting married is good because they want it. You know, marriage is associated with lower self-reported loneliness, a higher self-reported engagement, particularly later in life. Married people report much better outcomes. So those are individual benefits. Obviously, there's also like financial benefits. Let's say that you're a woman who wants to have children. If you want that and you don't have a married partner, supporting yourself while you're raising children is very, very difficult. But if you have a married partner, you can share the load, share the childcare load, share the earning load, whatever. You can share the load and it's much easier to achieve your life goals. But Ecclesiastes tells us that two are better than one and a thrice woven cord is not easily broken, but two are better than one. You get more done. So there are advantages to achieving your life goals when you have a partner who's backing your play, when you have a helper. So those are individual benefits. Of course, there's enormous societal benefits as well. When women get married and when men get engaged, their propensity to criminal behavior declines. And of course, the health benefits are societal benefits too. Having fewer people shooting each other, committing suicide, using drugs, and getting various illnesses is good for society. So that's a benefit of marriage. Of course, married unions we know that they are the safest environment for children to be raised in. Children consistently raised by two married biological parents have a fraction of the rate of experiences of abuse and violence as other children. It is enormously protective of virtually every social pathology to be consistently raised by two biological parents. And of course, the rearing of children is vital for a healthy society. I could go on. I don't even know. There are so many social benefits to more people being in stable unions. One can hardly count them. But of course, for us as Christians, it's all very well and good that marriage might make people, you know, 12% happier. And it's very nice that marriage might protect them from some bad outcomes. And it's sort of a lovely, pleasant outcome that marriage has societal benefits. All well and good, but for us, that's not the good of marriage. For us, the good of marriage is that God has ordained it as an honorable estate and that he has told us that it is good for us. So even if it didn't make us have happy feelings, and even if it didn't make us healthier, and even if somebody, you know, was able to train a robot that could make kids have even better outcomes than if married couple had, marriage would still be good because its goodness is not dependent on its effects. As you know, it's dependent on the fact that God declared it good.
Lyman Stone is a PhD candidate in population dynamics at McGill University. He's director of research for demographic intelligence, adjunct fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, research fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, and co-author of a column for The Atlantic titled "Now Political Polarization Comes for Marriage Prospects." You can find a link to it on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Lyman, thanks.
My pleasure to be with you.
Wednesday on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Peachy Keenan about winning the culture war. We'll discuss the gospel scripture and the Lutheran battle for the Bible with Dr. Ken Sherb and its media coverage of religion with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of his family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to eighth grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
This is Jeff Schwarz, General Manager of Lutheran Public Radio, with a message for listeners in the Mountain and Pacific time zones. We pledge to have Issues Etc. podcasts posted daily, no later than 5 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Pacific, This will allow you to download and listen to the latest Issues Etc. podcast weekdays during your evening commute. Again, if you live in the Mountain or Pacific time zone, download Issues Etc. before you leave work and listen during your drive home.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.